coming to you alive through the power of the interwebs. Inside the Green Room Studio from the flagship source of the Earth Mix Garden Products Network, it's the At Home Show with Josh Carey and David Bates, bringing you all the wisdom
and wit
you'll ever need to tackle your garden and your projects. Now broadcasting live from Bates Nursery and Garden Center at 3810 White Creek Pike, just 1 mile north of exit 19 off Briley Parkway.
Or 0.9 miles as the Josh drives.
Here's Josh Carey and David Bates.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome in. You're viewing and listening to the At Home Show. Here live from the Green Room at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. Josh has got the day off.
He's on assignment.
That's right. He's on assignment. And that assignment entails doing whatever Diana wants him to do.
Which is usually a lot.
Quite a bit. I'm David Bates. Alongside today, of course, Michael Stevenson, our producer, as always, Honora McGarry, working the camera behind the scenes. Thank you, Honora. A very special guest today, longtime friend, Alan Lincoln, affectionately referred to around here as Dr. Lincoln. That is an honorary title, not an actual doctor.
Yes.
However, after decades of service in the field of horticulture, I don't know if you could be a tree surgeon or not, but you could certainly be a shrub surgeon.
Yes, probably so.
I don't know of many with that designation, but welcome, Alan. Glad you could be here this morning.
Thank you for having me, David.
Hey, you know, we're always looking for a little bit of different kind of an angle of wisdom to add to the program. I don't know if we'll find it today or not.
Yeah, I don't know about the wisdom, but the little different part that's been said many times.
All right, now, tell us about yourself. You are a native Nashvillean, right?
Native Nashvillean, lived here all my life.
There's at least two of us in this room.
Yes, that's right, that's right. You know, pretty much my expertise is in installation of woody ornamental plants. That's what I did for many, many years until coming here working for you. So I have learned a lot by trial and error.
And there are a great many trials in life, as we know.
Yes, and trying to landscape in Middle Tennessee produces even more trial and error.
It certainly does. And one of the things that... because of the wide-ranging conditions that we have to deal with, we get an opportunity to work with a lot of plants, a lot of different plants. Coming up here in just a few moments, we've got a special guest coming on board, so stay tuned for that. Let's talk briefly about the weather, and then we're going to get into Alan a little bit more here. Of course, today is Saturday, the 19th of September. Can you believe it already? Wow. Tuesday is the official beginning of fall. However, you wouldn't know it by stepping outside today. 58 degrees here in the Music City. 75 for the high today and abundant sunshine. Could you script a more perfect forecast? I think not.
No, outstanding.
And if you look at the 10-day forecast out ahead of us here, there's a couple of clouds here and there, but it is 70s and lower 80s. That doesn't happen until the end of the week.
All right.
The next weekend.
So this is kind of our first cool snap.
Yes. Decidedly. And, you know, this time last year, in case you don't remember, we were still way into the 90s. Now, this doesn't mean, I'm hesitant to, you know, to say that, it doesn't mean we won't have any of those temperatures coming back, but it sure gives you hope that at least with a forecast like this, where we've got sunshine and cool temperatures, that fall is here. And this is a great time for folks to get out and plant and think about what's going on in their lawn and their landscape. So, Alan, you went to the University of Tennessee.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And did you study horticulture when you were there?
Yes. When I went through years and years ago.
It's been, what, like almost 10 years ago now?
Yeah. Almost 10 decades ago. It was more, the degree I have is in plant and soil science. Okay. There was landscape classes you could take and so forth like that. But there was a lot of agriculture, forage crops and things like that that was also included. But I did get a degree in plant and soil science.
So the horticulture degree in that area was still very much a works in progress. It wasn't, they hadn't really rounded out the horticulture program like they have it today at the University of Tennessee.
Exactly. It was, 40 years ago, we were still very much an agriculture-based area, a lot of emphasis on that part of it, but there was the beginning of horticultural things. In the beginning, we usually just put in yards and maybe put 20 plants across the front of some kind, and there was no really thought put into it like it is today.
And as Adam Chapman mentioned last week, and by the way, thank you, Adam and Austin, for filling in last week. Really appreciate that. We had some goldenrod on the set last week, and Adam mentioned that when he was getting his degree from UT Martin, that he learned that to be a weed, and of course it's now sold as a perennial, which it is a perennial. However, it a weed is what is defined as a plant out of place. So most all of your perennial plants in one place or another are considered a weed. They're just something that comes up.
Yes.
So goldenrod is a beautiful plant this time of year. You've seen it around the landscape. So after you got out of college, you got into the horticulture industry, right?
Right.
And you worked here locally for a number of years for John Waller, right?
Right. Yes. Back, I started working in the early 70s with John in the beginning while I was going to school. And then when I graduated, I went in business with a couple other guys in Lebanon for a few years and then came back and worked for John and worked for him probably another 6 or 7 years before going into business for myself.
And then you were in business for yourself for
38 years.
Yes. And then for the last about, 15 years of that, you have also worked here at Bates Nursery on weekends.
That's right. I've come out on Saturdays and kind of helped with the flow of traffic that we have on Saturdays out here.
And certainly expect there to be quite a flow today. So there'll be a lot of folks with a lot of questions. And of course, we always recommend you know, when you're coming out and you've got questions about your landscape, it sure helps folks like Alan and all of our other landscape professionals to have something to look at, take photographs with your smartphone, your tablet. That goes a long way to helping us have information to be able to figure out what to do and what to suggest on the landscape.
Right. There's so many factors and so many variables that go into it that in order for us to try to give you the best value for your money and purchase, we have to understand what your situation is. We have to know exposure. We have to know soil. You're living how you operate. I used to go out and on jobs where people would talk about doing huge projects and all this sort of stuff, and I see RVs and boats and campers.
It means they're gone a lot.
It means they're gone a lot, and they're not going to have the time to take care of the investment that they're putting in. And quite frankly, the investment is getting larger and larger and larger. You know, years ago,
certainly,
$400 or $500, you could do quite a bit of stuff. Those days are gone. I mean, to make it look nice, you really are sinking some serious money into it. So a lot of thought needs to be put into it. And it's surprisingly, a lot of people come out here that don't even really know their exposure. They don't even know where the sun comes up.
Well, lack of planning, I think, is easily the largest or the biggest mistake that many most people definitely make, not having a plan put together. Hey, I want to bring on our guest here. We're really glad to have him come on board today. Brent Furby with Isley Nursery, and all these plants you see around us today are all representative of the products that the great folks at Isley Nursery produce. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, David.
Hey, glad to have you in this morning. I've got a little video we're going to play here while we're chatting here so that we can give folks an idea of what Isley Nursery is all about. There's no audio with this, but you can you'll get to see the expansive nursery. And the one thing we missed just there was the double helix serpentine hedge that comes into the entrance of the place there. I always loved when they made that change. But these are loading docks area, obviously, of Isley Nursery, where orders are being gathered together, getting be prepared to load on to trucks, right?
Absolutely. And very representative of what the spring looks like in Isley. It's always a full dock, always a bustling crowd in and around the nursery, and you know, a nursery that employs well over 200 people throughout the year, and at the busy times over 300. We're a very steady employer and a growing facility in the good old city of Boring, Oregon.
Right, and Boring, Oregon, for those of you who do not know, are pretty much in the foothills of Mount Hood. It's right, I correct. Mean, it's just, I mean, it's, of course, every picture you see in the metropolitan Pacific Northwest area around Portland all has a photo of Mount Hood, but Isley actually is really close to Mount Hood. It's not, you know, 20 miles away. It's like 5 miles away, perhaps.
As you're going up the mountain, we are about, I mean, via road, we're about 15 miles, but you can see the landscape of Mount Hood very clearly from any point in the nursery. It's a beautiful place to work.
So quickly, let's talk about a little history of Isley Nursery. John Isley, and his name is spelled J-E-A-N, so a lot of people incorrectly pronounce it as Gene.
Gene Iselli. Yeah. I mean, most times you know, I get a phone call from a homeowner or somebody asking, you know,
Gene Iselli,
do you work with that Iselli Nursery? Yeah, Isley. And yeah, it's a Swiss pronunciation. John actually started the nursery 45 years ago, this month. 45 years ago this month, 1975. And so we are still a relatively young nursery, in the landscape of Oregon. We are, you know, have been around as far as selling wholesale since about 1980.
Right.
The Isley started out as a kind of a plant collector nursery, and there's Mount Hood. There's a picture of Mount Hood right. from the loading dock. But we started out as a plant collector nursery and really got into wholesale sales in around 1980.
Oh, I interrupt you for just a second. The pictures we're looking at here, of course, I would classify Isley as a predominantly container operation. However, this illustrates that they do, in fact, grow plants in the field. A great many of these are either dug, bald, and burlap. Some of them, some types of things, are even boxed after they are grown in the field, correct? And finished growing. A lot of the maples are done that way, or some of those.
We don't do any maples in the field anymore.
Is that what that is?
We grow all of our maples. We start them in our...
Now, these are all foxtail blue spruce in that photograph.
Fat Alberts, which is an Isley plant. We found... we introduced that plant back, I believe, in the early 90s. But we do a lot of B&B production. Most of that stays west of the Mississippi River. A ton of our B&B production actually stays locally or goes to the Four Corners states, mainly Colorado and Utah.
Well, and I will say, as a seller of Isley plants, it has been no small challenge. And the reason is the Isley plant, they're a very unique grower, obviously, Alan, and you can confirm this in the marketplace. Isley grows a mix of products that other growers simply don't grow. They grow, they have an incredible selection. They're very high quality. I know that John Isley, the emphasis initially was kind of in two areas, is in conifers and in Japanese maples, and that's still the truth. There's still a lot of products that you guys produce. How many different Japanese maple cultivars do you guys produce?
I don't have the exact number because it kind of changes daily. We are constantly getting new maples from people throughout the world,
right,
as well as what's on screen right now. Right. For those of you that are viewing, we have developed five maples that we've introduced to the market just in the last 8 years. These are more cold hardy maples, so not necessarily
for this area.
They can be utilized in this area.
Are they heat tolerant enough?
And they're actually humidity tolerant enough that they...
And that's a big issue here because a lot of people complain about, well, my Japanese maples are kind of look burnout.
Yeah.
As it gets into August, And a lot of that has to do with people planting them in the wrong location, you know. And in the South, you can get away with, and, you know, we're really about as far south as Japanese maples really do well.
Thrive.
But even here, you need to be thinking about location, about getting them in the right spot where they're getting morning sun or shaded by some larger structure or tree in the afternoon hour so they don't scald quite so much. It doesn't kill them, but it makes them look unsightly.
Oh, absolutely. And our maples that we grow most of them out in the open, wide open sun. So we've got a little bit different heat intensity in Oregon as opposed to here in Nashville. Different sun exposure. But once they get here, definitely need to be protected.
Well, let me ask you this. How have there been adverse effects due to the amount of fires that have been in the Pacific Northwest? I have a brother who lives in Eugene, which, of course, is a few hours away from where Boring is. And that's where a lot of the worst of the fires have been located. Has the Boring area escaped that to this point?
We have escaped actual fires, but we have not escaped the
smoke.
The ash. The closest fire to us actually was down in Eagle Creek, which is only about 3 miles from the nursery.
Wow!
So we were very. The nursery actually has been closed for the last week, only because the unhealthy air quality. Wow. We're not able to open the doors to the employees and safely have them, you know, on the nursery property.
So we were fortunate to get our shipment out when we did, because that was cutting it close.
Yeah. It was. So last Friday, we actually closed the doors. The truck left for Bates here left last Thursday. So we had about a 24-hour, it was close.
Well, we're grateful to have that. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, here around the studio, we have exclusively Isley plants here, and
you have a good mix and representation of what we grow at the nursery. You've got a several pines, several maples, and a few things that we, you know, a few camassiparis. What we really are known for as far as dwarf conifers go.
Yeah, the King Kahuna of the conifer kingdom, as I've heard it said, and yes. They are definitely that.
We are still a dwarf specialty conifer nursery. To this day, that is our main focus, and that's where we will always focus.
And when we're seeing some pictures here of the John Isley Memorial Garden, and that's one of the entire nursery is a highlight reel, but going through the garden is where you get a chance to see these mature specimens of these plants that are produced in the nursery sit in a landscape setting, really get to show off what they can do ultimately.
Right. Great display.
And have you gotten to go out there too?
Never had to go out there personally, but I've seen some footage of the nursery and had a chance. You know, back years ago, we used to have to, several of us, go in together to get a load from them. You know,
I think, of course, is John Isley right here. Yeah,
and it was difficult to get that material in here because not too many people were getting it in. But, you know, we unload a lot of trucks here, as you well know. But when this truck comes in, the Isley truck, most of the staff wants to be here to unload the truck so that they can see everything that comes in, because it is
such
a contrast.
It's the only day you'll actually hear people lamenting the fact that they did not get to work that day. Carrie, who works at the checkout up front, was one in particular. She was I just love unloading those trucks. For people who are real plant people, getting to unload an Isley truck is a lot of oohs and ahs.
We are definitely, and what's great about the nursery is we are plant people through and through. And some of the original people that started with the nursery back in the late 70s and early 80s, they're still with us. Are the original propagator, a guy by the name of Paul Hallidin, who is the brainchild to quite a few of these plants that you see out here, who he has collected and all. He is still our propagator. And
let's talk about that process for just a moment, Brent. You know, it's the actual, you know, you got to have, it takes a lot of people who have horticultural interest to be out in the real world and spying this little sport of growth that doesn't quite look like the rest of it. And, you know, maybe it exhibits a variegated, you know, where that has a gold or cream colored variegation. I don't know, perhaps it's a different growth habit than what the normal plant exhibits altogether. And that process and the refinement of whatever is found is really a part and parcel, the key element to producing these hundreds of varieties of dwarf conifers that Isley Nursery produces.
Yeah, and you see that a lot with our introductions that we have as a nursery, whether it's a dwarf conifer that we've introduced, a camassiparis or a blue spruce, or the maples that Paul has been working on for the last 25 years. We are not quick to market with anything. It is a very long and drawn out process that,
well, you got to build numbers first and foremost. Plus you've got to determine before that it's really a viable plant to produce. Not every plant Absolutely. That will grow is really a marketable plant. It might have a nuanced use somewhere, but it's not wide enough to really have market value.
Absolutely. And what you said about building numbers, what a lot of people don't realize with our product in particular is our average time from propagation to sale is 7 years.
Yeah. Now, this Japanese maple that we've got in the corner back here.
It's a 6-gallon.
So that tree right there would take how long to produce from a beginning?
After we graft to a sellable 6-gallon, you're looking at no less than 7 years. You know, no less.
And therein lies the reason why that the price is associated with them that there are. You know, yes, there is desirability to be sure, but you know, there are no Japanese maple machines you turn on out there that just cranks them out. You don't manufacture plants, you grow them. It takes time. It takes a lot of, and we saw footage of a lot of the workers in the field trimming on topiaries and doing all the cultural things that are necessary. It takes a long time to produce the quality plants that give the appearance of having been manufactured. They're so consistent.
And if you think about where we were 7 years ago when we were starting, you know, we were just coming out of an economic downturn,
right,
and we were still a little wary. So that's why these plants, you know, they are a premium product, but they also, you know, it takes time. And there's a little bit of a, I won't say a plant shortage because you guys have an abundance of our material here, but we have a, you know, we are still on a very strict allocation process, and it's definitely a different.
Well, to be sure, yeah, here at Bates Nursery, we have worked hard to be deserving of that opportunity to get to, because we're big. You know, our Isley display is front and center. When you first come in, you're going to see the entire palette of what we have of all the things that are conifers, and then we have the box Japanese maples dispersed throughout our display area. So it really makes as far as helping customers be able to come out and be able to get a look at what all of the options are available. Certainly, Alan, from a salesperson standpoint, someone as a landscape professional to be able to say, well, this is a good maple for your particular application, or this one may outgrow it. You might consider something more like this.
Right. You know, everybody wants that special piece in their garden. You know, people that are into their gardens and stuff
And much of what we're talking here, these are
specialty
focal
pieces.
They're focal pieces in your landscape, depending on what the view of the area is.
And a lot of people will come in and they see the topiary stuff and they think, you know, this plant grows that way. No, there's been countless man hours put in to producing this plant that you see before you today.
So you're telling me that if they buy a spiraled plant, that you don't have to take a big pipe wrench and screw that into the ground. Actually just dig a hole.
You just dig a hole like any other thing.
But you do have to keep spiraling it. It doesn't stay spiraled.
And,
right?
And they always say, well, how do you do that? Well, you follow the guide that's there. I mean, you just follow what's there. I mean, you know.
The one thing that's true with conifers is that, you know, unlike where broadleaf plants or deciduous, where that if you are neglectful for a few years and not diligent about pruning, it's more difficult to take back real estate that, you know, when they grow, you can't just cut them back to where they're devoid of foliage like you can get away with on broadleafs and deciduous. You kind of have to trim them all along if you've got expectations of keeping a plant within the bounds of an area. That's why it's so important to get an understanding, talk to experts like Alan about what plant you're buying and what is a reasonable expectancy of the future growth habit of it. The mistakes a lot of people make simply are putting the wrong plant in the wrong place. It's you know, if you want to judge this black dragon right here, if you want to use that as an example, that's something that is very good as a cryptomeria, a Japanese false cedar, that will stay in balance pretty well, but you wouldn't want to put that under a window that's this high because it's gonna way outgrow that. So you got to get information on what you're looking at and understand what its potential is.
And sometimes people mistake when they hear the term dwarf, they just automatically assume that that's gonna stay small.
Yeah, it's dwarf compared to the parent plant,
right? Absolutely, and also the way we describe dwarf is rate of growth per year. So when we say something only grows, you know, 1 inch to 3 inches a year, you know, that's what we usually determine as dwarf. Well, over time, you know, 3 inches a year, it's not going to be, only 2 feet tall at maximum, you know, garden height. So it is something that you've got to take into consideration when you're purchasing any conifer out there.
And one of the things that particularly Camassiparus are notorious for is that they look so innocent and so go well. Look at those gold mops. Yeah. They're beautiful and they're small. They'll be nice. But you just wait about 4 or 5 years and then something happens. They go whoosh. And so you almost kind of, if you're going to use them in one spot, be prepared with a plan to transplant them to a different area and kind of have that in mind. And that's all a part of the plan we're talking about.
Right.
You know, the old saying is if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And those kind of mistakes in the landscape are preventable if you can get some kind of a plan ahead. And you don't have to have a $5,000 scale drawing. No. You just got to have some sketches and some photographs and have a realistic belief and understanding of what you're going to get out of the plants.
Right. Well, we see a lot of times, like, people will purchase boxwoods and then they want to put the golden mops in front of them, you know.
Might look okay for a year or two.
Yeah, and that looks fabulous when they first do it. But what we try to tell them is you actually need to flip that if that's what you want to do. You need to put the golden mops in the back and put the boxwood
even
down
if
in
they,
front.
Even if it doesn't appear to be the truth right off the get-go.
Yes, it's going to look a little funny, but, you know, 5-6 years down the line, it's going to be killer. Look nice.
Let's take just a minute, talk about where we're broadcasting from today, Bates Nursery and Garden Center. We talked about it at the top of the show. If there's ever been a perfect weather conditions, we've got it right now. Cool temperatures, only going to be 75 for the high today. We have just unloaded this week a full semi-load of Isley nursery plant material. I can say with absolute confidence, no one else in within probably several hundred miles has anything to compare as far as the selection of Isley plants on hand right now.
That is correct.
And you're the guy who knows because you're the sales rep for all the areas around. So we are fortuitous in that we got our shipment out before they had to temporarily close the nursery down.
Yeah, we actually opened back up this morning, so they were having people at the nursery this morning.
Glad to hear that. But whether you're looking for Isley nursery plants, specimens like that, or you just have regular overall landscape situations you need to work with, you know, we have it all. We, in addition to the Isley plants this week, we also unloaded a semi-load of container-grown trees. Have we ever had a selection of container-grown trees like we currently have?
Not in recent memory, anyway. I mean, I was doing a lot of tagging the last couple of days.
Anything before last week is not recent memory.
Yeah. It's we are jammed full of great selections.
And not just quantity, but real
great selection.
And that's how we roll at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. Part of our really belief in products like Isley Nursery is the fact that it is undisputed the top of the list of quality. And that's what we try to offer at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. Can you buy cheaper plants? Yes. But if you're looking for the best plants and you're looking for something that's really special and something that's going to give you a long-lasting value, and that's really what we sell here is value. It's what you get out of your landscape is what you want to get out of it. And we have the palette of products to work with here at Bates Nursery to help you get that. So come on out and see us today. You see Alan or any one of our staff out here. Bring photographs on your smartphone or tablet along, and be prepared to look. There's a lot to absorb, and whether you're talking about trees or shrubs or plants from Isley Nursery or perennials or ornamental grasses or fruit trees or shade trees or fall color, we've got a huge selection of pansies, panolas, violas, ornamental cabbage, kale, and edible landscape plants for fall gardening, spinach, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, kale. I could just keep going on, but I'm not going to. So come out and see us. We're conveniently located 1 mile north of Briley Parkway. Exit 19 on White's Creek Pike. That's just minutes from Rivergate, Opry Mills, Nashville West, or downtown Nashville. And I promise you, it is worth the drive from anywhere. And we're proud sellers of Earth Mix Garden products. So it takes the guesswork out of success in planting. So come see us. We're open at 9 o'clock. We're also open on Sundays now from noon until 4. Right. So 7 days a week right now, Bates Nursery and Garden Center, beautifying Nashville since 1932. And thank you for giving us a moment to talk about that. So, Alan, going to be a lot of folks come out today.
Sure.
And it's easy to get starry-eyed and delusional and
we really see it all the time.
Because it's overwhelming.
It is. People come out and they just, after a while,
I don't know where
just,
to start.
You can tell it's just kind of like, you know, they're just kind of glassed over. I mean, it's like, God, I can't believe y'all have all this stuff to choose from. So it's very important to do your homework, to know what your situation is. One of the products that y'all have, Nico Cypress, is probably one of the most asked about plants that we get from you guys. And y'all grow so many different kinds of them. That foliage texture goes well with so many plants,
The dwarf cypress that we grow, I've got way too many of them in my own personal collection.
Yeah. But that's what we do, though.
It is. Yeah. And I absolutely adore it gives you a very soft, I think you referred to it as nurturing earlier. It's just a very soft look, and it's a little bit different look. You've got one right behind you here with the gold. I'm not sure if that's Sunlight Lace or which one that is.
Melody.
That's Melody. Okay, yeah, so we grow so many different ones that are very...
that's why we have tags.
Because, absolutely.
Because unless you are working there at the nursery in a block where that you can closely observe these nuanced differences, I mean, sometimes there are differences that are beyond how the foliage looks, its growth habit, or its slight color differences, or heat tolerance. There's all manner of different qualities and attributes that plants have that create a situation where that it's worth adding another product into the mix.
And you can see, I'm not sure if many people can see this on the camera, but you can see a distinct difference between the Cryptomeria japonica black dragon back there towards the back, and then this Cryptomeria right here. There's just such a distinct difference.
This has a very loose, very lacy almost look to it, where the black dragon is very deep, very dense, very much darker colored.
And I will say one thing I want the people that shop here at Bates to keep in mind, especially with some of these conifer products, is as we're going into the holiday season, and as we've started to see people utilize our more conical spruce and different products as gift ideas or living Christmas trees.
Right.
So just keep Bates in mind for, like I said, as we transition into the holiday season here about using, and maybe instead of, I don't want to take away from cut Christmas trees, but I absolutely.
Well, we don't do cut trees at all. And that is so well covered already. We do recommend folks considering an alternate look of tree. You know, use a Camassiparis or a Cryptomeria
the plant directly behind you. We have started to see, and one thing that it does, something like the Cupressus right behind you, is it will add a fragrance to your house or that you've never had before. I jokingly say that smells like Fruit Loops. If you touch your hands and then, or if you touch the foliage and then smell, smells like Fruit Loops.
Yes, I think it does.
I haven't sniffed
a box of Fruit Loops lately, but you know, but yes, I think you're right.
I have a 4-year-old at home.
Okay, there you go.
So yeah, it's a it gives you a little bit different feel than just your average cut fur, and also that keep that in mind as we transition through the fall. And
now, one of the things we'll say, I can't believe it's September and we're talking about living Christmas trees.
Yeah.
However, if you're going to use something as a living Christmas tree, the amount of time you have it inside, you have a different set of rules that you got to play by. I even recommend folks that if you want to keep it decorated for a long period of time, put it on the deck or on the patio and decorate it outdoors and don't bring it in the house at all. If you want to, because seriously, 7 to 10 days is about as much time as you want those to be inside. These are plants that are dormant at that time of year. You do, even if you keep them watered sufficiently well enough, you don't want them to break dormancy and then go from 70 degree temperatures out to 20 degree temperatures without a transitional period.
Absolutely.
So you got to be thoughtful of that. So I'm all for get one and use it as an outdoor, and then you know, okay, after Christmas, I'm going to plant it right over there.
We have a lot of people too that you know, they want a live tree. They don't want to do a cut tree. They want a live tree, but you know, most of our pines and our Norway spruce and things that we typically get in can be kind of heavy and be hard to handle.
Bald and burlap plants in general is a lot of weight on those.
Some of these 6-gallon and 10-gallon plants and things that we get are perfect for people to carry in the house without killing themselves.
Right.
And like you say, you got to keep
scratching the floor.
Yeah, just a short period of time in the house, but you can set it on a little table or something, and from the road looking in the window, it looks like a big tree, and it's just easier to handle, just a lot easier to deal with.
A lot easier, yes.
And a lot less of a mess.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, I haven't given out the number all day, 615-499-6690.
It's on the screen back there.
It is on the screen, but I haven't actually said those letters, numbers out there.
Yeah, those are weird-looking letters.
They are weird-looking letters. I can't tell my letters from my numbers these days. So anyway, if you've got a question for Brent or for Alan or for any of us here, you can either call and leave a message, or you can text us to that number, and we'll get you put out there on the air, and we'll talk about that.
And if there's something you want to actually talk about live, just put on there, and I can give you a call back, and we can actually get you on the show.
Yeah. So that's the way we do it here at the At Home Show, 615-499-6690. So, Alan, in addition to all the trees and shrubs, and Michael, this is in your wheelhouse also. It's that time of year when people should seriously be thinking about
grass seed, fescue, lots of fescue.
Yes, definitely.
And, you know, the conditions, we got copious amount of rainfall a week ago, actually just 6 days ago,
right,
where that some areas got as much as 6 inches or even more, you know, had major flooding to deal with, while other areas got, you know, almost nothing. But most areas in the metro Nashville area got a significant amount of rainfall, a couple of inches thereabouts. So,
right, and like you said, last year, August was really hot and dry last year.
Yes.
We were really dry going into this time of year, still up in the 90s. I mean, it just wasn't a good time to try to sow grass. But then I think it was like we was in the 90s the 1st of October, and then a couple of weeks later we went to 17 that evening. You know, it wasn't much of a window to get grass in. But now this is eerie similar to what we expect.
Now, one of the things I will recommend to anybody, just briefly on grass seed, we're not going to belabor that point, is if you're going to spend money on grass seed, you really need to take the time to do some actual preparation. You would not buy tomato seeds and broadcast them on the hard ground and have any expectation that they would live and do well at all. The same holds true with grass seed. You're just planting a monoculture, many thousands of little plants that are going to be growing together, hopefully. But they only do that if you create either a seed bed. So if you're going to do a complete renovation, and overseed. Obviously, Alan, you got to get out there and you got to till the ground. You got to do some work on
right,
it.
Right.
Because if the seed doesn't make contact with the soil, you got nothing.
Right, right. It's not going to take, and you wasted all your time and effort and everything you do. If you use a core aerator, if you use a dethatcher, whatever
those
mechanism.
Things help tremendously.
To loosen it up.
And what they do also is to help ensure that the seed has a chance to make contact with the ground.
Exactly. If the seed lays up in the thatch or it lays up in existing grass,
you got nothing.
You got nothing. Yeah. It's got to get down to the dirt.
And I was going to say, if you're waiting for the perfect time to plant some of that grass seed, this is it.
Yeah.
Right now.
It doesn't get better. Yeah. And you've got the entire season ahead. You got something for us there?
We do. We have a voicemail. David from Evansville. And I don't know why I didn't do that. One moment.
Technical difficulties.
Let's try it again.
Hey, David Bates. This is David from Evansville. My question, I have in front of my house, I have like three hollies, but I would love to put a blue spruce on the end. My question is I'm in a subdivision where they had came in and on top of clay dirt, they had put regular soil. So once I dig down about 2 feet or so, I'm going to hit a lot of clay. So my question is, will a blue spruce or what type of conifer will grow good in clay? I can always put, you know, a lot of dirt around, but eventually it will go into the clay. Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
David, thank you. That's a great question. Brent, obviously with conifers, they are forgiving in a great many ways, and Alan, but if you're in a hard compacted clay soil, a number of problems can arise. Just being hard ground is probably the least of them. Conifers can't stand wet feet as a general rule.
That is absolutely the case, and Alan will have more experience with the soil around this area than I do. Talking about amendments and everything, what do you recommend, you know, for somebody that is going to be in that deep clay?
Well, Alan, you talk about that for a moment. We'll talk about the amendments here just in a second.
Okay. Yeah. You know, typically what you're looking at, you got to keep in mind when you're planting in something like that, you're basically putting the plant in a large pot is what it boils down to. The clay is there. The root system is going to grow out to whatever
you're putting
you
in
prepare.
A large pot that doesn't have drain holes.
Doesn't have drain exactly. holes, and it just presents a huge problem. Now, you know, you got to amend the soil that's going to be in direct contact with the root system. So obviously, amendment has to be done. But just keep in mind that your conifer is going to struggle almost no matter what you do in a situation
Not all clay soils fail to percolate completely. Some have enough chert element in them or enough organic material that's granular that would allow for it to the water to pass on through. You don't want if you dig a hole and you fill it full of water, if it's still standing in water, you know, 24 hours later, you've got an issue. Right. So first thing you've got to do is figure out how I'm going to get that excess water out of there, because you can do all the soil preparation you want, but just like planting in a container that has no drainage holes in it, unless you're planting something in there that is extremely adept at and loves wet feet, and there's a very limited palette of those kinds of plants, and the only conifer I can come off the top of my head is bald cypress, and that's a deciduous conifer that will stand in water and grow. But unless you're growing that, pretty much everything else, you've got to make provisions for the water to get out of there. You know, plants need to get wet, but plants also need to get dry.
Right.
That's why roots grow is in search of moisture. They need it alternatingly. So we'll segue for just a moment, talk about Earth Mix Garden Product, which is a perfect segue on the question for David here. And we've done a lot of work on Earth Mix Garden Products to try to develop a line of products that are for gardeners who are looking to get the very best results out of their growing efforts. These are... Rather than taking the approach of trying to find the cheapest inputs to blend together, at Earth Mix Garden Products, we've tried to take the approach of getting the very best products. And just like with Isley plants, you get what you pay for. And with when you combine that with 100% organic approach, sustainably produced, and it's done so right here in Nashville, Tennessee, you have the opportunity to have great success and be very productive. I'm going to look at the products tab here for just a moment, and we're going to show you the Landscape, which is the premium soil conditioner. And this is the product that very likely David would want to use. He might also consider using Enlighten, yes, if drainage is really bad. And what Enlighten is expanded shale product. Because it's been heated to a couple thousand degrees Fahrenheit, this shale has been puffed up. Mm-hmm. And so it is porous. It is much less dense, and therefore it helps to promote positive drainage. So the premium soil conditioner does have Enlighten in it. So it does help you quite a lot. Depending on the severity of your problem would determine whether you need an additional product or not. The great things about products such as EarthMix Landscape is that it already has everything you need in it. Right. You don't have to do anything but mix it in with your soil, and you're ready to plant and prepare for success. All you got to do is make sure you keep it watered. So anyway, there are lots of EarthMix sellers around the area, and we're really appreciative of our network. We do have someone in Bloomington, Indiana. So if you're calling from Evansville, not too far away from you, over at Bloomington Valley Nursery. So you can see that down here. Check it out on earthmix.net. Just go to the Find EarthMix tab, and all of the resellers around Eastern United States are all marked right there. So remember this, success in gardening begins at the ground level when you use EarthMix garden products. And thank you for giving us a moment to talk about that. So
Catherine Griffin has asked on Facebook, when should I put in stone crop? And I have no idea how to pronounce this, David. I want to butcher it. Antimony? Antimone? A-N-T-E-M-O-N-E?
Antimony.
Antimony.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, well, the answer is the same on both of them. Yeah. Yeah. They're container-grown plants. You can, you know, I like to tell people when they ask what's the best time to plant, I usually say 3:30 because it's as relevant to time of day as it is to time of year. There's no transplant shock. Just like all the products you see here, all container grown. You don't cut a single root when you plant them. It's all a function of, you can have equal success planting in August as you do in April.
Provided that you don't leave to go out of town
right
the next day after you've
so
done
So long
it.
As you are prepared to take care of it. Exactly. And that's the caveat that a great many struggle with.
Right.
You know, those 2 weeks in August that they were gone on vacation, I said, well, I've had these things in the ground for years. Well, depending on what the weather conditions are,
it can happen.
Stone crop, of course, is a sedum, very resilient plant. That's one of those things, like most sedums, if they missed a few waterings, it doesn't really faze them very much.
Not too much. They kind of like to dry out a little bit, you know.
Actually, yes. And if you use something like Autumn Joy sedum, for instance, which is one of my favorite plants, it is the most bulletproof plant there is. It's the only plant I know of that you could just plant it in the ground and never do anything to it.
Pretty much, right.
And it would likely make it. I've got some in some pots that have been out on a deck area near in the back of the nursery for a decade. They're not in irrigation. They bloom and do wonderfully. They don't get moved in the winter.
They
just keep growing and looking good. So that's a plant that's sedum as a group is very good. However, that's only true as long as they don't have wet feet. Exactly. Just like we talked about on the spruces, they really don't like wet feet.
And another thing, David, I want to touch on when the guy was asking about preparing the soil. A lot of people come in and say, well, you know, I've got my compost, and I've dug this hole, and I've backfilled it with all this compost and everything. What they don't realize, when you use nothing but organic material, that it will break down and deteriorate and go away.
It settles.
It settles. It goes down. You need to take these amendments that we have, mix it with some your existing soil if you have good soil. Mm-hmm. If you don't have good soil, then you need to bring in just some screen topsoil or something. Mix these amendments with it so that you do have something that stays in there
and
for a long period of time.
The target area say you're planting, let's take it for a shade tree, for instance. You really don't want to excavate an overly deep hole and have a lot of this organic material underneath. The lateral roots is where you're going to get it. Exactly. The tree needs to be sitting up solid, almost on a, like a pedestal.
Right.
You can have soil going down around it, but you want that tree sitting on a solid spot so that it does not settle. You want it to, you want it to stay on grade in that elevation where it currently is. But all that amended soil around it really helps a lot to give those roots something really friable to grow into. I planted an autumn flame maple in my front yard 2 years ago. It was a 15-gallon. It might have been 1.25 inches. It's well north of 4 inches now.
Wow.
But I planted it like I knew what I was doing.
Right.
And it is doing really well. Yep. You got something else, Michael?
Uh-huh. Rudy and Helen from Wakanda, Illinois. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Mm-hmm. They say, good morning. We have a white pine tree about 7 feet tall that we planted 2 years ago. It seems to have two main leaders that each have multiple branches coming off of each one. Should we prune it?
Hmm. I wouldn't do it now.
No.
I mean, as conifers in general, this is not the time of year. You could do it now. The problem is it's going to look exactly the way it looks when you prune it for the next 6 months at least.
Yes.
If you have done something to kind of try to rein it back in a little bit, you have to look at it a long time. You can get away on conifers with a little more severe pruning at the outset of the growing season. So if you do it mid-March thereabouts, you can get away with doing a bit more. Now, the question is, should they?
Yes, that's going to be the biggest problem. A double trunk like that is a huge problem in a white pine, especially.
They're so fast growing.
Yes, but you need to do something, because if you don't, and then once it gets 25 and 30 feet tall with two trunks, it's going to be very vulnerable to splitting either in wind or ice or snow.
So generally what we like to do if we're in the real world landscape situation is try to determine which appears to be the more dominant of the two. And I'm talking again because you're up in Illinois, I think is where they were, right?
Mm-hmm. Wakanda, Illinois.
Wakanda, Illinois. Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea how far north in Illinois that is. Your spring may not break until, you know, April. Later April, yeah. You know. Whereas here would be in March, just before it starts to put out new growth, figure out which one that you want to make the non-dominant leader in it and cut that one back pretty severely.
Yes, and it's going to disfigure it. It's going to make it look bad. But
by pruning that one out and then doing a shaping overall, with that first flush of growth, you're going to get a lot of new growth coming back at, and it will do – it might not cover it all in the first growing season, but it sets the framework so that you can have a reasonable expectation of it looking like you want it to look in the landscape. You know, if you're looking for symmetry, until you decide which one of those you're going to prune out, you're never going to get it. But I wouldn't do it right now. I'd wait until nearer to spring.
Right. Definitely. Definitely.
615-499-6690. You're listening to the At Home Show and watching us on Facebook, on YouTube. We hope that you will share our program out on Facebook. We really appreciate that, to get the word out on it. Also, you can subscribe on our YouTube channel, share it there as well. And if you subscribe on there, you'll get a notification every week that, hey, we're on the air. We talk about what you want to talk about with regard to your lawn, your landscape. This is the less sarcastic version of it. Josh is not here today, so we're lacking in sarcasm. Josh, you know, we miss you, buddy.
Yeah.
Look forward to seeing you again next week. I'm sure he's enjoyed having a couple of weeks away here. And
he could have made the effort to call in, but that obviously shows how much he thinks of us.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, I was really honored to be my own first guest on Zoom last week, and we do have that capability. So to my friends around the industry, around the country, if you happen to be watching, you're going to get your shot. So we appreciate you taking the time to be a part of the program and helping us, you know, spread the word about horticulture.
Spread the knowledge.
We all have got a lot more time around the home than we have had in the past. And none of us knows exactly where all this is going. So we might as well make the best of it and learning the tools and the skills necessary to have a great-looking garden from an ornamental standpoint or from a vegetable standpoint. We're here to help you with that at Bates Nursery, along with the great line of products from EarthMix Garden Products.
Sure. We have a lot of customers that will come in that will almost apologize for lack of knowledge. You guys that are in the industry know in the last decade or so, there's been such a plethora of new plants. I mean, new plants are coming on the market constantly. It's almost impossible unless you're in the industry or you really have a really desire to delve into the possibilities. But there is such an influx of new material coming in all the time. It's really hard to know everything.
Well, and one of the things, and of course, Brent, you're not exposed to this as we are because you're on the grower side of the equation. But what we have seen is speaking of plethora, is the plethora of neophyte gardeners, first-time gardeners, people who have they're spending this time at home, and all of a sudden they've realized, we could really make this look a lot nicer if we got out there and maybe planted a few things. And that's where I really encourage folks to, we want to sell you plants. I mean, there's no secret about that. But you don't want to have what I call the shopping cart landscape, where that you have kind of impulse bought things, and then you get home and you go, well, where am I going to put it?
For the millennials or Generation Z or whatever they're calling themselves this week,
group are you?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I'm 32 years old, and I don't know.
Millennial. You're a millennial.
Utilize the knowledge that you have at Bates. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to come in with a blank slate and say, I need help, because there are a lot. I mean, there's knowledge here that will help your, there was an image up that said, don't let plants just, or don't let them just be alive.
Survive,
let them thrive.
Let them thrive.
Yeah. And places like Bates will let them thrive.
Well, and when you deal with independent garden centers, you're going to get a level of information that's not available at the box stores. And that's not discrediting the box store folks. I mean, they have their place, but they haven't spent traditionally, like here and at many other, most other independent garden centers around the country, they don't have that investment in the, we've both been in the industry multi-decades, and you do acquire a level of information that you most of the time really are not even cognizant of,
right?
Because you encounter, as landscape professionals, when you get out and you actually encounter these various problems in the landscape, and then you begin to come up with ways to deal with it, like we talked about with David in Evansville about having a conifer. He's thinking about planting in a spot where, I mean, that sends up, for me and for you, a red flag immediately that you got to address that, or you'll never have success with what you're trying to plant there.
Right. People ask me, like, how do you know all this? How do you know all this information? I say, well, if you've dug up as many dead plants as I have, you would start to figure it out.
There's a pattern here. Yes, I need to figure out what it is.
Why is this plant dying in this clay that I'm planting it in? What is this problem? You figure things out after a while, especially when you have to replace them. So it's just a lot to know. It's a lot to know. And a lot of people, like I said, seem to be apologetic over not knowing. That's perfectly
all
right.
You can't show up with all the knowledge, and we don't have all the knowledge, but we've got a group of professionals here who have areas of specific interest that really are, Austin is one of those guys who, the amount of knowledge he has with regard to disease and pest diagnostic ability is really amazing. He's a phenomenal asset here. We talked to Joy out in the perennial area. Is she, Catherine called and asked us the question about perennials. It's the wrong two people.
That's right.
You need to come out and talk to Joy here. Yeah. Joy, yes. Bovin. So she's a great source.
Yes. Like I said before, it's just the industry's gotten so diverse. over the last decade or two, and in the knowledge of the material. I was telling a customer that yesterday, I believe it was, spent quite a bit of time with them because they were just confused as to what they needed to do. They didn't know. They come in to get a Jap maple in full sun, 12 hours a day full sun. He tried to talk me into it. I tried to talk him out of it. And after a while, he said, you know, I really appreciate the time that you spent trying to educate me on what I need to do. And I said, look, you know, here at the nursery, I think all the sales staff feels the same way. Our ultimate goal is to help you be successful, not necessarily to sell plants. We sell plants, and that's what we do. But our ultimate goal is hopefully to be able to direct and guide people so that whatever project they're doing, whatever plant they like or whatever, it is successful.
That's right.
So that they can feel good about what they've done and the money they spent and how the project turned out. And so that's what we try to do. We try to guide people the best of our ability.
And, you know, that's why we try to help you get the right plant in the right place the first time. And this week, for sure, that plant would come from Isley Nursery. So Brent, we want to thank you for coming out today and being a part of the show and talking about the great plants at Isley Nursery. They can check out the Isley Nursery website if they want to see this. That's Isley.com.
IsleyNursery.com.
IsleyNursery.com. For David Bates, Alan Lincoln, Michael Stevenson, Norm McGarry, and today, Brent Furby, thank you for joining us today. Come back and see us next week. You've been watching and listening to The At Home Show here from Bates Nursery.